was reminded again of Nadia's mannerisms. Where I come from, everyone spoke it. My mouth felt a little strange forming the words. I hadn't actually spoken the language since Pog taught me his. "Where do you come from?" The Empress finally smiled, and I wanted to scream at the similarity between her and Nadia. I was born in a stable. My father was a blacksmith. I shrugged and tore my eyes away from her to focus on my food. Alatoricht had mentioned that you were not forthcoming with information. Perhaps you will be more open with me? She smiled again, and I tried to keep my eyes off her mouth. What do you want from me? I want to get to know you better. She held out her empty cup to the air, and a servant almost instantly appeared to fill it with tea. I find that hard to believe. If I called you a liar, would it piss off your lapdogs? I looked at the male with the spiked red hair. He frowned slightly, but didn't seem offended. What would make you think I am lying? She tilted her head sideways a bit like a confused animal. The movement made her bronze hair fall off one of her shoulders like a wave of water. Something strange was happening. It felt like magic, but I couldn't identify what kind the Empress used. I didn't feel my usual anger and disgust in their presence. Perhaps it was her resemblance to Nadia? A few of your warriors attempted to kill me in this city about 10 months ago. It doesn't seem as if you would order that if you wanted to know me better. I can see why you would feel that way, but I did learn something about you, didn't I? She smiled slightly again, and her generals grinned to match her, save the woman with the white hair. She didn't seem to pay attention to the conversation. She was looking at my hands. You learned I could kill your brood easily. Did you expect any different? I finished my meal and pushed my plate away. The food had been delicious, and I could have eaten another 8 courses without feeling full. What name were you given, O Barney? She changed the subject. I believe you already know that. I snorted and looked over at Alatoricht. He shook his head. I am interested in that name. She took a small bite of an egg and then slowly chewed. Finally, she swallowed and reached for her glass of wine. I am somewhat of a historian on the Destroyer. Call it a hobby, if you will. Can you guess why? She smiled at me again, and I suddenly thought about fucking her. She looked too much like Nadia. I don't care for games, Elvin. Make your point, and then tell me what you want from me. I felt my stomach tighten as the words left my mouth. I was walking a thin tightrope, and insulting her might tempt her to do something rash. But if she wanted to kill me, she would have done so by now. She needed me for something. The Destroyer raised an army from nothing, and conquered Green Solo against a superior force. I believed that there was much to learn from him, how he trained, battled, thought, and loved. I wasn't the leader of our people back then, but I knew someday I would either free us or assist the one who would. I needed to know how he was so successful. What is Green Solo? I couldn't remember any mention of it in my memories. It is the world on which the Destroyer was born. It is the nexus of the Radical and where the O'Barney Games are held every 10 years. She stopped speaking and studied me for a few seconds. Or maybe she was waiting for me to respond to her statement. I thought about my memories and the single moon. It was large and light green. The name was fitting. So you studied the Destroyer, learned how he built an army, somehow won the O'Barney Games, begged for this world, and got here. I filled in the story I had put together from speaking to Alatoricht, Islata, and Virnine. But I was already here, which angered you. So you tried to have me killed, but failed. Suddenly you changed your plan and decided you wanted to get to know me better. I don't believe you. I picked up the glass of wine and drained the rest instead of looking at her. "How did you get to this world?" she said with another smile. In this way, she differed from Nadia, who would have tried to punch anyone in the face who had indirectly called her a liar. I still could not shake the feeling in my head. I was attracted to the Empress. I inhaled deeply and picked up the scent of her skin and hair from across the floor. Her smell mixed with the lavender, the food, the wine, and the building's sexual needs I had not extinguished since I fucked Virnine and Islata many months ago. Probably the same way you did, but I do not remember. I held my glass out to one of the servants, and he quickly filled it with a wine bottle. The man moved with such fluid grace and speed that I guessed serving was not his main role in the army. Concentrating on him pushed the images of ravishing the Empress out of my mind, briefly. "I like the scar on your hand," the woman with the white hair spoke suddenly. "It is very fitting. I can tell you did your research on the destroyer." The Empress nodded, and I felt a tension in the room shift to my scarred left hand. "There have been a few of your kind that have pretended to be a rebirth of the destroyer. Sometimes they even get a small following before the other clans eliminate them. I've studied most of them and spoken to my generals about them often. Most of these men get small details wrong. The scar on the hand is often overlooked. How did you acquire it?" The Empress flicked out her left hand while she spoke, and the servant replaced my plate of food with another. I pulled off the gauntlet of my armor to rip the elements out of a dragon, and then another one breathed fire on me. It was painless at the time, but I wasn't quite myself at that point. I couldn't help but smile at the ridiculousness of this situation. "Very interesting. What happened after you were burned?" The Empress smiled in what I assumed was mock interest. "The last dragon got away. I jumped on her talon, but slipped off and fell to my death. I felt sick, and I screamed at myself to relax. I could not faint right now, or have another memory, or do anything fucking stupid that would get me killed. If you died, how are you still here?" the man with the red hair asked spitefully. "He is humoring us," the woman with the onyx hair said. "He is not," the woman with the jade hair and eyes whispered with conviction, and the others turned to look at her. "What happened after you died?" "I came back to life. Then I wandered the world looking for someone. I smiled at how odd it sounded. They were trying to check their legends with my own past, but the truth was often more fantastic than the stories historians crafted to explain impossible events." "Did you ever find that person?" the jade-haired woman asked. "I don't remember." I nonchalantly put more of the smoked fish and rice in my mouth. If anything, this second helping tasted more delicious than the first. "Perhaps this person wasn't important then?" the Empress asked. I shrugged and focused my attention on the food. The elvens were still working on their meals. I would be able to clear 3 more plates before they finished. "Alatoricht has asked you about your clan and told me you were not forthcoming. I must admit that your behavior has kept us guessing. Can you tell me which clan you are from?" The Empress smiled at me again, and I felt the nausea in my stomach fade. Why was she so likable? Was it her similarity to Nadia, or something else, something that garnered the reverence of all her people? "Does it matter?" I looked at the white-haired elven and tried again to remember where I had seen her before. "It does. We have better dealings with some clans as opposed to others," the onyx-haired woman answered for the Empress. "I do not have a clan. All I know of them, Alatoricht and Islata have told me." "You have no loyalties?" the Empress raised an eyebrow in disbelief. "I am loyal to humans. I remember the past atrocities your kind inflicted upon us. They were silent to my response, and I took the opportunity to finish the rest of my meal. "Tell us your name, O Barney," the woman with the white hair demanded. "What is yours?" I spit back. "I am Fehalda, general of the Empress's Black Army." She looked around at the other generals before speaking again. "The O Barney has a point. We didn't introduce ourselves to him." She smiled strangely, and the other gathered elvens matched her grin. I realized I must have said something they found even stranger than my other statements. "You know me," Alatoricht smiled. "I am Yillamar, the Hatchet, general of the Red Army," the man with the red hair said with pride. "Jaita, general of the Teal Army," the woman with the onyx hair nodded to me. "Disanti of the Brown Army," the woman with the jade hair and eyes said. They all seemed to be gauging my reaction to their names. Should I have known who they are? "I am Talaxthi," the Empress said at last. "Can you tell us your name and title?" She smiled in amusement, and I suddenly thought about kissing her red lips. "Kyair, son of Kai." I gritted my teeth and forced the Empress out of my head. I expected them to cringe, as Virnine and Islata had, but the generals didn't seem to mind me voicing my name. "Do you have a title or station?" Jaita asked. "I am pretending to be the Destroyer, so I'll use that title." I couldn't help but smile, and I felt the atmosphere in the room lighten a bit. "No," Disanti breathed from her seat next to Alatoricht. The other generals turned to look at her again, and I noticed Yillamar's face twitch with emotion. He seemed to be the weakest, and my mind spun plans to antagonize him. "Call me a stable boy, then. I grew up as one." "You are quite convincing. Perhaps it is good that you are here and not on Green Solo. For your own safety," the Empress smiled again, but her eyes focused on Disanti. "Why is that?" I couldn't help but wonder out loud. "As I mentioned before, the clans would kill you for using the name and pretending to be the Destroyer. They have done an excellent job of keeping his legend hidden on all of the worlds. But you are an expert." I tried to say it sarcastically, but the words twisted in my mouth and came out sincerely. I needed to leave. My head was hurting as if I had a bad hangover. It was the telling sign that I might have another fainting spell. I took a few slow, deep breaths to steady myself, but it only made my headache worsen. "It was not an easy task, but you also seem very educated on the topic." Talaxthi looked at me and then brushed back a lock of hair that had fallen over her left eye. "Perhaps you can give me some interesting perspective on Kyair, since you believe you are him." The other generals smiled in excitement. "You don't really want to know me better. What elven tribe did you belong to? This is something the histories are unclear about, and I have always wondered. Why do I like you so much?" My head was throbbing, as if it was a drum full of water on a bumpy ox cart. "What do you mean, Kyair?" Her lips pouted, and I felt my arousal building. "Is this magic?" I nearly spat the words on the wood floor of the pavilion. "Perhaps it is." Her smile turned into a smirk, and I knew I was correct. She had some sort of power over my emotions. My head was spinning now. "You were going to tell me which tribe you were born into." She motioned for the servants to bring her another cup of tea by raising her glass. "The tribe was called Laxil." I gritted my teeth and clenched my fists. I didn't want to tell her any more, but I felt compelled to do whatever she wanted. Her scent filled my nose now, and I could hardly hear over the pounding in my head. "That is what I guessed you would say. It makes the ending to his legacy all the more ironic. I felt my vision swimming. I couldn't seem to smell or taste anything but Talaxthi. I wanted to devour her. I needed her. I would do anything to have her. Voices filled my head. I recognized Entis, Shlara, Thayer, Malik, and Alexia, but I also heard Iolorothi. They were screaming, but it sounded so far away. Then I realized what I needed to do. The earth constantly flowed through my body like blood. It enhanced everything about my perceptions. I was impossibly strong and fast, but I could also hear a mouse's heartbeat from 100 yards away and be able to see the same mouse from 0.5 miles away. The same powers applied to my sense of smell and taste, since they were both closely connected. I twisted the earth and did something I hadn't done since Graykin, Danor, and I made our trek through the sewers of Naya. I stopped the flow of earth to my senses. Almost instantly, the pain in my head eased, and my vision cleared from the darkness that threatened. I tried not to gasp, but I failed, and a sigh of relief left my mouth. I had been slumping over in my kneeling position, and I brought myself upright with a victorious smile. Fehalda, Jaita, and Yilamar could not hide their surprise. "I can see how you convinced the clans to allow you to enter the Obarni Games. I wonder why you needed such a display when you could have just used this manipulation." The Empress's smile left her face, and her eyes narrowed. The movement looked even more like Nadia's angry expression than I wanted to admit. "I am impressed," her smile returned, "but you do not seem to understand how clan leadership works. I don't care to understand them. I am here with you now, in the belly of your army and before your generals. I am your prisoner. You do not need to control me any more than you already are. Just tell me what you want from me." My mind had fully cleared. The Empress licked her lips and leaned back in her plush seat before responding. "Do you understand the concept of money?" she asked. I nodded and was about to ask her again to get to the fucking point, but she continued. "I want you to imagine that you purchase farmland. You save all of your money for the investment, and you arrive to your new property with family in tow, excited about the possibilities for your future." I nodded again to show that I understood. "But once you arrive, there is something wrong. The fields are barren, the soil doesn't give life, and worst of all, the former owner's extended family is still attempting to live off the land. You try to reason with them, to tell them that you have purchased this land fairly, and all you want is a place to grow with your family. Yet the squatters claim to be unaware of the deal. Then agents representing the seller come to call. They are plentiful and have weapons. They explain that there has been a mistake, and that this place isn't really the one you bought. Instead, there is another property down the road a bit. Then they ask for more money for the inconvenience of moving you. Alatoric mentioned something about a treaty. Is this what you are alluding to?" I looked over at the elven with the long silver hair, and he nodded slightly. "Yes, Kyair." Her mouth rolled around my name before releasing it. I was no longer intoxicated by her magic, but she still reminded me of Nadia. She still had the power of all beautiful women. "I know nothing of these other worlds, but I don't understand why they cannot give you one free of humans." I crossed my arms and inhaled. It felt like my nose was plugged, but it was just that relative to what I was used to, my unenhanced senses were so dull. It had been a long time since I had experienced the world through my natural human senses. "There are humans on all of the worlds connected by the Radical." Her eyebrow arched slightly, as Nadia's would have if I had asked her an obvious question. "This is the fourth time we have attempted to reach an agreement about the future of my people. You are here, like the others of your kind that have accosted us in our new homes. If the pattern repeats itself, I can expect more of your kin to show up in a few months. You will harass us, attack us, and bully us until you force us back to the shared worlds. She did her best to hide her emotions, but her generals were not as seasoned, especially Yillamar, whose face contorted into a wolf-like snarl when Talaxthi finished. I could tell she was waiting for me to respond to her statement. She probably expected me to defend my people, or to make an excuse. I doubt they really believed that I was the destroyer, even though I admitted as much while under whatever magic she had used to manipulate my sense of smell. What I really wanted to tell them was that I didn't give a shit about their problems, and I couldn't understand why the clan leaders had not exterminated them as I planned when I led my army. Why the violence when you arrived on this world? The leadership here in Naya claims that you have conquered most of the northern lands. You came to the king's banquet and made aggressive statements in front of his people. Your ambassadors murdered their guards. I remembered the four elvens who interrupted the banquet when Jesme's father had attempted to knight me. I find it hard to believe you are the victims here. I tried to shift focus back to her motives instead of answering her question directly. Before she answered, I raised my wine glass to one of the servants, who promptly filled it with dark purple liquid. Of all the oddities of the current situation, this simple act of being served by the race that had enslaved humans seemed impossible for me to reconcile with all of my memories. We are both warlike races, but we wanted to accomplish our goals peacefully. When my predecessors tried to colonize the first three worlds, they came with arms outstretched. I believe that this ended up causing more strife and bloodshed between us. Her generals had all gained their composure a bit and nodded with Talaxthi's words. The lore of this world conforms closely to the other outlier worlds we have wanted to colonize. They know little of the history of the ancient masters, our rise to power, the time of the destroyer, or the current Obarni clan divisions. I had a dozen questions, but I tried not to look confused. Your people have poor memories, but they aren't entirely to blame. Time tends to twist stories, and the leadership of the clans tried very hard to eliminate all knowledge of our shared history, especially any mention of their betrayer. This world is so far removed from even the outliers that we were not surprised to encounter confusion about the Obarni and ancients. We decided that we could use the mistaken legends to our advantage. Yes, we have killed here and pushed our way into this seat of power. She gestured into the air, and I took the motion to mean the country of Naya. But in the end, using their fear to our advantage will have caused fewer deaths. She smiled at me and then picked up her glass of untouched wine. Her amber eyes never left mine as she took a small sip. You fear I will report back to the clans? My question brought a smug smile to her lips once she had put the glass of wine down next to her tray. No longer. Jayita and Yillamar laughed softly from their seats. I nodded and smiled along with them. I wasn't going to be doing much of anything with 12,000 troops surrounding me. Yet here we are. I'm alive, having breakfast with you and your generals. You've obtained Naya, and eventually the rest of this world will be yours, provided the clans don't stop you. I am enjoying the food, but not your presence. I keep asking when you are going to get to your reason for keeping me alive when you had earlier sent assassins after me. How did you survive those assassins? Fehalda leaned forward slightly when she spoke. My mind tried to remember why she was familiar, but the memory didn't come. I've been asked that before. I looked at Alatoricht, even though it was Islata who had asked the question back when I was their prisoner. I assumed she passed information on to her general. Perhaps I don't believe the tale I was told. The white-haired woman snorted at my answer. Because they were your assassins? I shrugged. Yes, she smiled wickedly. I was probably just lucky then. I let the sarcasm soak my words. Her brow furrowed in annoyance. Tell us about the explosion in the east wing of the castle. The Empress interrupted our exchange. It ruined my room and all of my clothes. I didn't get a good look at the outside of the castle, but I imagine it didn't fare much better. They weren't keeping me alive to understand how I destroyed the wing. Alatoricht had captured me well before that. Did you cause it? If I did, then I do not know how. I awoke, and everything was in ruins. The Empress maintained eye contact with me while I spoke, but I noticed her other generals turned to look at Disanti. The green-haired elven made no motion after I had spoken. Talaxthi continued to study me, and I felt that she was probably waiting for me to say more. I could play her fucking game all day. The food and wine here were much more enjoyable than what I was getting in the tent, or the toxic porridge I had to stomach in Nadia's camp. I motioned for the elven to bring me another plate of food by pointing at my empty dishes and holding up a finger. He looked quickly to the Empress for confirmation before clearing my discards and moving to the rear flap of the pavilion. Disanti and the Empress continued to stare at me intently. After a few minutes, the server returned with more food. This time it was a plate of steamed vegetables and a slab of peppered venison that lay atop a bed of scrambled eggs. I was tempted to use my nose again to enjoy the food, but decided against it. If the Empress was still using her magic, I might not be able to control myself. Tell us about the radical you came through to reach this world. The Empress's voice was like silk sliding across the skin of my neck. I noticed a slight change in the tension in the room and felt as if we were getting closer to the root of why I was still alive. It had a stone platform in it with matching walls. What else do you wish to know? I took the last bite of eggs and began on the vegetables. Do you remember its location? Her question was simple, but with it, everything fell into place. I understood why she had kidnapped Jesme, imprisoned Nadia, and attempted to kill me before switching tactics. The clues had been there, but I had not pressed Alatoricht for the right information. It was a short-sighted mistake that might cost me my life and change the fate of this world. I may remember, I answered ambiguously, trying not to grit my teeth too hard. If I told them now that I was not sure of the radical's location, I would be dead within minutes. But I'm sure you could find it yourself. You have a large army here. I gestured around the space and assessed the guards again. I might be able to make it out of the tent before one of them got a crossbow shot off, but that was without taking into account the generals, Viernine, and the other two sentries guarding the door. Or the Empress, who had won the O'Barney games on 5 consecutive occasions. Even if I did make it out of the tent, there would be an army waiting. We will be able to find it, of course, but you could help expedite the process. She smiled at me reassuringly and broke her gaze to glance at Disanti. The green-haired woman nodded ever so slightly. Once I help you, my usefulness will end. I smirked and tried not to laugh. The smile on my face helped relax my body. It was something I could remember Entis telling me. We can honor an agreement, Kyre. Can you? She smiled like a wolf, and I noticed Alatoric's grin vanish. I'm listening to you now. You bring us to the Radical, and we will send you home, unharmed. You could also stay here indefinitely if you wish. I would enjoy speaking with you more about the history of the Destroyer. You do seem very well versed in the subject. She raised her wine glass, and the room relaxed a bit. If I go back and speak to the clan leaders about this world, won't that upset your plans again? I already knew the answer, but fished for it anyway. No, I explained before that we desire peace. You may be an agent of the clans, but I am sure you will speak favorably of us to your leaders when you return. I nodded and forced a smile. If I decide to stay, what would you imagine that would be like? A prisoner in your camp until I decide to leave? Will you lead us to the Radical? She pressed again. I sensed a bit of urgency in her voice. I can guess what will happen if I say no. I smirked and didn't have to wait long for a response. You are intelligent, Kaer. You will make a wise decision. I will give you a few days to consider my request. Perhaps we will meet for dinner next time. I nodded quickly in agreement and wondered if some of her magic had gotten past my makeshift defense. Then we will bid farewell for now. I enjoyed meeting you and hope that you will have good news for me when we see each other again. Her voice came across sincerely, but I doubted she meant it. Virnine and four of the guards moved from their posts on the edges of the pavilion toward me. I finished the last of my wine and stood. The two soldiers nearest the Empress held their hand crossbows casually by their waists, but the weapons pointed at me. I nodded to the Empress and her generals before turning around to leave the tent. "Wait!" a voice called from behind me. I turned back to look at the elven with the jade hair and eyes. "We were told you spoke the names of our dead gods," she said skeptically. "I don't remember that," I shrugged. "Your memory is foggy sometimes," the Empress smiled with her question. "Thank you for breakfast." I turned again without answering her and walked out of the tent. I made it 10 steps out of the pavilion before Virnine and her guards formed ranks around me. She did not speak until we returned to my tent. "What are you thinking?" she asked. Her red eyes would have given human children nightmares. "I thought the food was excellent." "Don't fuck around, O'Barney. You know what I am asking." She frowned slightly, and her guards gave me icy stares. I had no doubt that with a quick word from Virnine, they would relish killing me. "I will need some time to think." I lazily flipped over into a handstand and did push-ups while I smiled at her from my upside-down position. "Very well," she huffed and motioned for her warriors to leave. "Wait," I said, just before she left. She pivoted gracefully back to face me. "Perhaps you'll care to join me in my exercises." I winked at her between repetitions. "Another time," she said after considering for a few moments. Her guards couldn't hide their disgust, and their facial expressions made me smile. "Too bad." I felt warmed up enough to switch to single-arm handstand push-ups, so I let my left hand off the floor and held it out parallel to the ground while I continued my exercise. She observed me for a few seconds before leaving the tent with her attachment. I spent the next 10 minutes doing my physical work and pounding over the events of the morning in my head like my father had worked the iron in his forge. I knew the Empress had power. Her magic did not come from the elements, and attacked me in a way that I had not anticipated. I was lucky to have found a defense, but that was just one trick she used. I doubted that an elven who had beaten the O'Barney games and become the leader of her people only had one talent. I sighed to myself and began my single-leg squat exercises. At least the time alone in the tent afforded me plenty of opportunity to exercise and plan. I did have a few advantages over Talaxthi. She didn't believe I was Kyair, she didn't know about Nadia, and she needed me to take her to the Radical. All of these points of leverage I could possibly use to wiggle out of this situation and into a favorable one. The last and most important advantage I had over Talaxthi was that I guessed her ultimate objective. I knew why she needed me to take her to the Radical, and I knew why she had an urgent need for me to do it. She was going to destroy the Radicals on this world and prevent the Obarni from influencing her people again. I had to stop her.
Chapter 12. Jesme. The winds picked up speed and whipped my loose hair into my face, although it did not appear to make the dark clouds that hung in the air over me move away any quicker. They seemed to gather from the four corners of the sky, like rivers of ink pooling into the middle of a worn blue table. "It will rain soon," I voiced my prediction to the woman who sat behind me on the horse. She didn't comment, but the steed snorted in agreement and wagged his head in annoyance. "Will we ride through the rain or make camp?" I asked her sweetly. I couldn't quite twist around to see the ancient's face, but I knew she possessed the alien beauty they all did. Flawless pale skin, almond-shaped eyes, and ears that grew long past their hairline. She also had the same pewter hair color and red eyes as her other five companions who escorted my uncle and me. "We will ride," the woman said. It was more of an answer than I expected. When I had been kidnapped from Castle Naya by the three ancients, they constantly spoke to each other, bickered and laughed while they hauled me up north and ignored me, as if I were simply lifeless cargo they were tasked with delivering. These ancients never spoke, never laughed, and never argued. I leaned forward a bit in the saddle and attempted to look behind us, where my uncle rode with his entourage on the narrow road. We had been traveling for 3 days, and our captors did a good job of keeping us separated. When we stopped for our nightly camp, I could see him across the fire. I tried to ask him how he felt, but he gave me a look that indicated we shouldn't talk in front of them. "It might be a bad storm, and it is almost lunchtime." I rubbed my tired hands against the hard leather of the saddle. My body was sore from riding, and I was not eager to reach our destination, which I assumed was my home, under the rule of their empress. "We are used to bad storms, kitten," the woman said indifferently. This was the most I had gotten her to talk since I was saddled with her 3 days ago. "I am not. I am sore, tired, and I want to rest. How far are we from my home?" "I guess 4 days?" But I had not done enough traveling through my own kingdom to know exactly where we were.
"5 days at this pace. You ate a large breakfast. We won't stop until the horses cannot see."
I groaned and shifted in the saddle. When my uncle and I had been captured, we both feared the worst possible outcome. Torture, imprisonment, and death at the hands of their empress. This could still await us in Naya, but so far they had done nothing more than hit my uncle when he tested them by refusing, at first, to mount their horse.
"This is a slow pace. We would move faster if we were not trying to keep you comfortable."
"Why does your empress wish me to be comfortable?" The woman didn't answer, and I let the conversation drop. I felt deeply shamed by her silence. Though I knew it was her habit, I was frustrated with my lack of cunning. How could my uncle expect me to run Naya, to save Naya from the rule of this powerful race, when I was not even intelligent enough to gather information from them now? I could carry on a lively conversation with another noble at a party. I could charm most men into doing what I wanted. But when charisma really mattered, I was useless. Kyair was cunning. He would know what to ask and how to get the most pertinent information from the ancients. He would devise a plan for escape. But if he had been with me, the 50 ancient warriors would never have been able to trap us the way they did in Reliant. I missed him. His smile, his laugh, his voice. and the moments we had shared in each other's arms after we made love. I felt my eyes begin to water, and I fought back the hopelessness that matched the gathering of the dark clouds in the sky. Chances were that we would never see each other again, let alone share our love and raise the family I wanted. It wasn't just him that I missed. I missed my father, Graykin, Nadia, my handmaidens. Even my brother had been such an important part of my life. I hoped that the old bear was still alive, somewhere on the boat, stuck with my angry mother. But Nadia and the others were probably dwelling in the spirit world with my father now. Perhaps they looked upon me as I rode toward my fate. They would want to bless me however they could. The thought of protectors watching over me eased some of my fear. I shivered, fighting against the cold grasp of the wind. I wondered if my captor had a naturally lower body temperature than a normal human. She did not feel warm, but perhaps I was projecting my mood and feelings onto her. There were no trees here. The hills were blanketed in low scrub brush, and jagged rocks had poked out of the surface like white-tipped waves on dull green water. "Looks like you have an acute weather sense, Princess," the woman said a few seconds before the first drop of rain descended from the inky sky and landed on our horse's face. The animal flicked its head around sideways in annoyance at the rain, but the protest did not stop the following downpour. "Now we can stop and set up camp?" I phrased it as a question, though I wanted it to be an order. I was not good at commanding others, and it was yet another skill I lacked but needed if I was to have any hope of ruling Naya. Though an ancient dragging me there against my will was probably not the best person to begin ordering around for practice. My captor didn't answer me, and in a few minutes I had all but forgotten about anything but the rain, the wind, and the resulting chill that spread through my body. I was weak. It could not really be that cold. My country never got as chilly as Lurma or the countries to the north. The ancients had given me a thick leather coat. The water slid off of it as if it were made of duck feathers. But my face was wet, and my long hair was drenched. I reminded myself that Kair had chased after me on foot for 2 weeks in the snow, without shoes or supplies. If he could endure that pain for me, then I could deal with this slight discomfort. If I were certain Kair would be waiting there for me and Naya, this would be easier to bear. Instead, my thoughts slipped away from me for the next few cold hours of travel. I thought of all the reasons I was not worthy to be his. The mistakes I had made, the lies I had told, the smiles I wore. The things I should have said to Kair. I hoped I would be able to one day say them to him. Eventually, my thoughts returned to my mother, the source of most of my regrets and guilt. I wished she had died instead of my father. I knew thinking such a thing made me a horrible person, but now that I was only days away from whatever fate the Empress had chosen for me, I needed my father. He was warm, caring, and gave all of himself to his family and the kingdom, especially to me. My mother had never been happy with the choice her family made to marry her to him, and she seemed to resist everything that could have given her happiness or made life pleasant for those around her, especially me. Nothing I did pleased her. I was not pretty enough. I did not make the right facial expressions or say the right things. I was not smart. I could not dance gracefully. My sewing was clumsy, my singing was off-key, my conversations embarrassed her, and she lamented that the nobles who interacted with me were judging her parenting skills because of how I turned out. I could not even allow myself to become betrothed correctly. Though that was more due to my father than me, and had caused yet another rift in their already contentious relationship. I tried my best to please her, but as Nadia had so easily surmised, the woman just did not want to be happy. My brother was the single source of her happiness, and she constantly tried to make me more like him. She applauded his victories in training and pushed our father to give him more responsibilities in the kingdom in preparation for his rule, all the while plotting to marry me off to the ruler of the most distant land she could find. Kair did not value my noble blood. He saved me from my captors because he loved me. He left because he loved my family and had to ensure their safety. But all this had done was put me in jeopardy. I never should have let him go. If I were more like my mother, I wouldn't have. I felt warm raindrops on my face and realized I was crying. I prayed to my grandmother and father to free Kair so he could return to me and save me from these horrible creatures. I needed him to wrap me in his arms, take me out of the rain, and make love to me again. I regretted the prayer almost as soon as I whispered it. I had asked too much of my father and grandmother in the last week, and I didn't want to strain whatever abilities they had. And Kair did not need their help.
"We will camp for the night near that tree,"
the ancient woman said loud enough to make it to my ears over the torrential rain. I tried to nod, but I was already shivering and couldn't force words through my numb lips. I lost track of how long we had been riding, but it felt like the sun was close to setting. It was very hard to see the vast span of the road through the darkness and rain. The horse moved off to the right and then stepped up to make it over the muddy shoulder of the road. The motion leaned me back into the woman behind me, and her arm quickly wrapped around me to prevent me from falling. But I still fell. The ancient attempted to shield me with her body, but the impact knocked the wind from me. I tried to scream, but I could hardly manage more than a gasp. It felt like Juri had punched me in the stomach again, but instead of trying to fight against the pain, I could only lie in the mud, dazed. I heard her scream, and my captor's thorny nails clawed at my leg. I tried to get to my feet, but slipped and fell again. This time I rolled down the hill and splashed into a river that was somehow colder than the rain. After a second of panic, I realized that the water wasn't deep enough to be a river. It was just the rain pooling at the bottom of the hill. I pushed myself to my feet and felt my stomach lurch in protest as my head throbbed in agony. I stumbled in the direction I thought we had been going on the road. My feet sank into the mud and water, and it took almost every ounce of strength in me to yank my legs free. The ancients had given me knee-high leather riding boots, and the suction of the mud threatened to take them away from me. They were very warm, and I didn't want to lose them at a time like this. I took another few steps, and someone grabbed onto me. I tried to scream, but a hand closed over my mouth.
"We have to run,"
Beltor hissed in my ear. Thunder boomed, and lightning struck in a bright echo. I tried to move faster, but my boots stuck again, and I had to reach down and pull them up with my hands.
"The shoulder!"
He tucked me over to the opposite side of the road. The ground was much firmer suddenly, and another flash of lightning revealed the thick patches of grass beneath us. He pulled on my arm again, and I tried to run after him. I stumbled through another thunderous boom, and my face slammed into the mud. Hans grasped me by the waist, and he grunted loudly with the effort of tossing me over his shoulder. He ran, and my body shook so hard that I actually started to feel pain through the freezing cold. Thunder and lightning struck again. Behind us, I could see the ancients for the instant the world was illuminated. I lost track of time in the darkness, in the falling sleet, in the thunder, in the brief flashes of light. I just wanted it to be over. I could not stand the running, the fear, the constant stress of wondering what horrible thing would happen next. I just wanted to be safe with Kair. We should not have run. The ancients would find us, no matter where we went. Surrender was inevitable and felt preferable to this perpetual flight. A clap of thunder boomed in my ears at the same time that I was blinded by lightning. Beltor stumbled, and I felt him tip. I tried to grab onto something, but there was only air, then mud, and then I could not breathe. Water filled my lungs, and I choked and coughed as I slid down over mud, rocks, and grass. A massive oak tree burned and cast black shadows on the darkened landscape surrounding us. "Uncle?" I came to my feet in a shallow pond formed by the folds of the hillside. Beltor coughed muddy water out of his mouth and lifted me out of the pool like I was a baby. He forced his way through the water, away from the burning tree in the hillside, but his breathing was coming out in painful gasps. He couldn't carry me much longer at this pace. "Can we hide?" I had to yell it three times before he understood what I asked. He nodded and said something back that I couldn't understand. He thrashed through the water and climbed up the muddy hill while I clung to him, a useless burden. He made it halfway up the slope before slipping in the mud. We fell together, but only lost a few feet before I grabbed onto the wet grass to keep us from sliding farther down the slick embankment. Beltor clawed into the grass with his muddy hands and pulled us up inch by inch until we crested the slope. The top of the hill was still lit by the burning tree, but the other side descended at a sharper angle into darkness.
Hold on.
He sat up and set me onto his lap. Terror gripped me as I realized what he intended, but before I could protest, he leaned forward and we slid down the other side of the slope almost effortlessly. Once I had visited my mother's parents and experienced a similar ride on a waxed piece of wood down a snowy slope, but that had been in daylight and laughter instead of darkness and thunder. We stopped sliding when we hit another flooded pool at the bottom of this hill. My face submerged again, and I came back up to the surface, choking out dirty water that felt slightly warmer than the rain. Lightning struck again, etching a white spider web into the sky. In the quick flash, I saw that my uncle and I had narrowly missed a large grouping of boulders during our slide. We were in an actual creek now, overflowing in the storm. Beltor grabbed my hand again and led me in the direction of the current. We half stumbled, half swimming through the flooded creek bed. The brook ended in a small waterfall that dropped 10 feet down to a deeper pool.
Hold on to this.
My uncle pushed me up against a boulder to steady me against the rushing stream. We can't make it down. I could not recall ever being this tired in my life. Everything was soaked through and my legs felt numb with exhaustion and cold. My muscles were spent, and I did not think I had the strength to take another step.
We can jump down. I'll go first, and then I'll yell for you to follow.
It was difficult to see his face in the darkness. He was going to break his neck on the fall, and his body would be swept away in the cold waters. Then I would be alone. No, no, no. I let go of the boulder and clung to him.
We have to, Jess. We need to escape.
He picked me up again and stumbled through the water toward the edge of the small waterfall. I panicked and screamed, but the sound of the thunder masked it. Then I was submerged in icy blackness. It was hard to feel the cold anymore. I was so tired, so chilled, so empty. Everyone that had loved me was gone. My father was dead, murdered by the people chasing me. My guardian was probably lost at sea with my mother. My handmaidens were gone, Nadia was gone, Kair was gone. Only my uncle remained, and once they found us again and took us to Naya, I suspected they would have little use for him. But the elvens needed me alive for something. I should let myself die here just to spite them. Finally, I could be useful and make my mother proud. You never even bothered to learn how to swim properly. I laughed to myself because I had learned how to swim one summer. I tagged along with Runeir, Nadia, and Nanos when they escaped the castle and played in the Stone River. When my mother found out, she had been furious. She tried to take it out on Nadia, but my cousin, even as a child, had chosen to ignore the queen like one ignored a small yapping dog. My mother could never chastise Nanos. Instead, she just punished me by relieving me of my handmaidens and friends for 2 weeks. Beltor yanked me out of the water, and I sputtered a frantic sigh of regret. No, today was not the day, and this river was not the place. Kair was still alive. Nadia was still alive. My brother, handmaidens, Uncle Graykin, and the people of my country still needed me. My mother was just a terrible and jealous woman. She would always try to shame me. I was never good enough for her. But I was here, fighting for my life, while she just wanted to give up and surrender to our enemies. That should have proved to the spirits that I was worthy of what I wanted. The spirits did not send me a sign to show they agreed with me. Instead, the rain drove down with fury, intent on washing the skin from our cold, tired bones. Beltor and I struggled on across the edge of the pond toward an outcropping of rocks. Light emanated from the storm clouds, illuminating everything in a soft orange glow.
Here.
Beltor found a small opening in the gathered boulders. He stuck his head into the dark hole for a few moments before crawling inside the cave. I knelt down and peered inside. It was impossible to see more than a few inches into the darkness. What if there were snakes or bears or some other evil creatures in there? I had grown up hearing tales of monsters that lived in small holes and liked to eat the flesh of young women, especially princesses. Although I believe they were known to prefer virgins, so I was safe on that count. Still, there had to be a better place to hide. "Jess!" my uncle hissed. The rain was still strong, but it was no longer forcing me to my knees with its intensity. I was too exhausted to protest. I crawled into the small cave and told myself I wouldn't scream if a snake or alligator tried to bite me. As I crawled farther into the cave, the mud gave way to moss-covered stone, then dry, smooth rock. It was so dark inside the cave I could hardly tell if my eyes were open or closed. It almost seemed brighter when I did close my eyes. At least then I saw swirly squares of light pulsing behind my eyelids. Ah! I forced myself not to scream when something brushed my hand and continued past my feet.
Just mice.
Beltor's voice was a whisper, and the patter of the rain seemed far away. His hand found my face, and we embraced. He stroked my soaking hair. The comforting sound made me realize I was crying. Then I started to cry more. Why was I crying? I missed Kair. I was scared.
Just close your eyes, Jess. We are safe for now.
He sounded tired. Are they going to find us?
No. Take deep breaths with me.
I tried to match his breathing. It was warmer than I expected in the darkness of the cave, and after a few minutes of clinging to my uncle, the chill faded with my fear, and I thought about what we might do to get ourselves to safety. We could probably last here a few days. There was water nearby, and eventually the ancients would stop looking for us. We could make our way back to Reliat. Perhaps Graykin would still be there, or we could procure another boat and continue to Brilla. It would be a difficult journey back to Reliat without horses, supplies, or food, but I knew we could make it back to the Bay of Corono. I could almost feel the salty wind on my cheek, and hear the gulls crying as they soared by the cliffs.
Jess May.
I turned my gaze from the teal of the bay and faced the white homes clinging to the walls of the cliff. Kair stood on the steep road above me. He leaned against the railing and looked down upon me. My heart soared with the gulls. He wore the dark green tunic and matching pants of the Knights of Naya. As he smiled at me, the distance between us seemed to shrink.
Jess May.
His mouth didn't move, but I heard him call my name. I didn't waste any time and ran up the steep road toward him. I was wearing my favorite cream garden dress, and I had to hold on to the edges of the long skirt to keep from tripping. Finally, I made it up the cobblestone switchback to where he stood. I miss you. I wrapped my arms around his waist and buried my face in his chest. His arms encircled my shoulders and made my head spin with joy. This was all that I wanted, to be with him, to love him, to feel his love.
Jess May.
I wanted to see his face again, so I pulled away from his embrace. But instead of the wonderful view of Kair and the city of Reliat, I opened my eyes to find darkness. I panicked and tried to stand, but arms encircled me and a hand went to my mouth.
Quiet.
Beltor's voice was softer than a whisper. Memories of our frantic escape through the lightning storm came back and I almost cried again. Kair had just been a dream. Maybe the whole memory of our time together had been a dream as well.
Jess May.
Someone yelled for me in the distance. It was hard to tell how far away they were, but it was loud enough to bounce into the cave where Beltor and I hid. The voice called again, and I gasped. It was a man's voice, and I thought I recognized the timbre. Kair? I asked my uncle. I couldn't tell for sure if it was his voice.
Is it Kair?
Beltor asked in disbelief. I recognize the voice. Do you? I raised my voice a little above a whisper.
Jess May.
The shout was louder now. I could see nothing but blackness.
No, I don't recognize the voice, Beltor said cautiously.
Jess May!
He yelled again. In here! I yelled. Beltor's body tensed next to mine, and I wondered if I had made the right decision. I didn't think the voice was an ancient's, but I could be mistaken.
Jess May?
The voice rang louder, and I crawled toward what I thought was the exit to the cave. Here! Here! I yelled after I slithered to the mouth of the cave. I heard my uncle crawling behind me and saw a faint glow of light ahead.
They're over here.
The accent sounded like it could have been from Naya or Brilla. My hopes rose as I got closer to a soft yellow glow. The storm clouds must have dissipated while we hid in the cave. The opening was awash in painful sunlight cut by the shadows of legs.